This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Joining me in the studio today is Datuk Dr. Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif. He's the chairman of the Policy and Strategy Bureau of Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia, better known as Bersatu. And we also have joining us on the line, Ibrahim Sufian, also known as Ben. He's the co-founder and director of programs at Merdeka Center for Opinion Research. Now, if you have a specific question that you'd like Rais or Ben to address this morning, just send over those WhatsApp messages our way at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Now, I'd like to begin, if I may, with your quick analysis of the results of the Port Dickson by-election over the weekend. Ben, let's start with you. What's your take on the results?
Well, I think it's a resounding victory for Dato' Sri Anwar, you know, confounding many detractors who felt that he may not be able to pull large majorities. And I think the significance of this win is that, you know, he's now poised to enter Parliament this week and then, you know, one step closer for the transition when the time comes from Dr. Mahathir. So, all in all, it shows that APH, Pakatan Harapan, you know, retains strong support from the majority of the electorate. B, the coalition of opposition has not yet materialized between UMNO or BN with PAS. And I think three, voters still put in a lot of trust and hope in Pakatan Harapan via Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim.
Rais, what about you? Do you agree with what Ben just said? Anything you'd like to add to that?
How can you disagree with Ben? he has done a lot of research and studies before. Yes, this is a reflection of the people's support for Pakatan Harapan, and not forgetting the charm of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. Everyone knows that the transition has been agreed upon. When the time comes to 2.5 years, that has been oft repeated. And just putting in Dato' Sri Anwar in the parliament back this morning, just fulfillment towards that transition. It is interesting to note, from the time of the nomination, I was present during the nomination, when we did some off the kind of survey, and we found out that simply overwhelming support. What is interesting is, although the voters' turnout was not as high as it was during the GE14, but the majority was overwhelming. Perhaps those six independent candidates are not of caliber to take on Dato' Sri Anwar. And obviously, the Port Dickson people know that he is the Prime Minister in waiting. That means they are going to have someone who will be very attentive to the constituency. So I think all in all, it's a reflection of people's continuous support of Pakatan Harapan.
Right, so a couple of interesting points that you brought out there, right, is the majority, the voter turnout, the, all in all, I mean, the independent candidates as well. Let's start with the voter turnout. So you mentioned that it was lower than GE14, but if you compare that to other by-elections, the voter turnout, 58%, is actually considered quite a high turnout as by-elections go compared to Balakong, Sri Setia and Sungai Kandis. That was, I think, the lowest it'd been since 2009. So how would you guys respond to the concept or the idea of voter fatigue that had been floated about after the by-elections? Ben, can we start with you?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we peer into the numbers very deeply, we find that the voter turnout is somewhat boosted by the postal votes, because close to 64% of military personnel and their partners or spouses actually turn out to vote. So that in some ways increased the percentage a little bit. So I think if we look at the actual voters in Port Dickson, maybe around 53-54%, you know, actually showed up. But all in all, I think it is a reflection of people wanting to be part of history, because Dato' Sri Anwar, you know, is touted to be Prime Minister in waiting. And he has made a lot of promises about bringing development to Port Dickson. And I think people want to be a part of that. But having said that, I think once we have the detail, we'll see the patterns. We do notice that younger people showed up in lower rates compared to older people, suggesting that, you know, I think for younger people and working age adults, many of them still didn't come back to vote.
Right. Rice?
Quite a high number of voters in Port Dickson, I think in circa 38% or so, are actually outside. I mean, they are registered voters in Port Dickson,
but
they
outside,
live outside Port Dickson.
Mm-hmm.
So possibly they have not returned to vote, presumably because they thought Dato Sri Anwar is just simply too an overwhelming candidate for the rest. So maybe they took it for granted. That's number one. And number two, relative to other by-elections, we are talking about Prime Minister in waiting. Whereas the other by-elections, there are another state assemblyman and so on and so forth. So the implication of Port Dickson by-election is monumental compared to the rest. So that's why, despite the fatigue, I think many people are talking about this fatigue, and I think to a certain extent, it is time for politicians to stop politicking and to start delivering on what they're supposed to deliver. And I think that is what will start from now on.
Ben, you mentioned a little bit earlier that this was really turnout was boosted by the postal votes, and that's really the military vote. So if I could look at the past candidate, Lieutenant Colonel retired Nazari Mokhtar, you know, he has a military background. So I'm just wondering your thoughts or your analysis on his appeal. 7,456 votes. He was the runner-up here, but in comparison, he was, you know, 2,000 votes shy of losing his deposit. Was he not seen to be a viable competitor to the Prime Minister in waiting?
Well, you know, if you look at Port Dickson is not a Malay majority seat. I mean, Malays only amount to 43% of the electorate in Port Dickson. It's, you know, basically a mixed ethnic area where no single ethnic group is in the majority. But if you look in detail in terms of the early voting, you know, voting by military and police personnel, the past candidate actually received quite a significant number of votes. If I'm not wrong, he received nearly one half of the military votes and the police votes there. And so, you know, while, you know, he definitely didn't receive any significant number of votes from the non-Malay population, as would be any past candidate, he did pull a significant number of the you know, security personnel votes. And I think this, you know, I don't want to extrapolate too much, but it does indicate that, you know, if with Barisan Nasional being in the wilderness like this, you know, the PAS would be, you know, emerge as a strong contender for the Malay votes in the future.
All right. Was the PAS seen as a stand-in for UMNO, for Barisan?
Well, not quite so, because, you know, Barisan Nasional didn't contest in this election, and that also possibly contributed to the lower voter turnout. What we do notice is that the past candidate received, you know, I think significant numbers of votes from the Malay electorate, you know, and at the same time, Tan Sri Issa Samad, who contested as an independent, you know, he failed quite miserably, and just shows that without the party branding behind him, even a long-time candidate from Port Dickson couldn't garner the votes if the party doesn't back him up.
Yeah, this was somewhat surprising, right? Because before the by-election, we had political commentators warning us not to write off Tan Sri Issa Samad as a serious contender. They said, look, the older generation will remember the goodies and the development that Issa Samad brought to Negeri Sembilan when he was Menteri Besar. So what happened there? Was it just purely the fact that he ran as an independent? Or what do you think, Rais?
I think more than just running as a purely independent candidate, he also has a huge baggage with him. So it's not easy to shackle that orange dress that he used to wear. That was...
it's a memorable image.
Yeah, so I do not think that... And then, even on the past candidate, he got quite a chunk. But remember, Malaysia is composed of all races, Malay, Chinese and Indian. And Dato Sri Anwar did got sizable chunk from the Malays, basically all the chunk from the Chinese and Indians. PAS as a reckoning force in the future, I think we need to look into it a little bit more detail. Being a very right religion, and sometimes I used to call them as the merchant traders of Islam, I do not think they are in the position to be a viable alternative. What probably the Malaysia needs will be a credible opposition who will take on ideas, take on all developmental ideas, economic ideas and all But to see PAS as a viable alternative to UMNO, I can't see that as yet. And I think with this kind of results in the last few by-elections, UMNO will start to recalibrate and reinvent themselves as well.
Right.
So if they do, there is a possibility of them re-emerging as a stronger force. But until then, I do not think there's I do not think PAS will be a viable alternative, except that they probably can do some work in the East Coast.
I want to talk about the independent candidates. All five independent candidates lost their deposits, but Saiful Bukhari Azlan, he only got, I think, 82 votes, right? He lost his deposit there. Talk to me about the Saiful factor. Did that make any difference within the this by-election, Ben?
Well, I mean, there was no factor at all. I mean, first and foremost, independent candidates in West Malaysia typically are not considered to be very serious opponents unless they are a big-name person like Shari Samad, you know, back in the day. But I think in this particular by-election, you know, independent candidates are typically severely disadvantaged, lack of resources, lack of recognition, and also lack of a clear message in terms of what they are about. And finally, I mean, it's contesting against Dato' Sri Anwar, who's, you know, Prime Minister in waiting at the helm of the ruling party of the country. I think they just simply had no chance, and voters didn't take them very seriously.
Rais, what do you make of Saiful's candidacy and his campaign?
Well, sometimes you see comedy courts in action. So that is the comedy court in action. I think, first of all, it's amazing, but we should celebrate the democracy that enables comedy court in action. So
his right to run within this by-election. Yeah. All right, so now that Anwar has won, we're going to likely see him sworn into Parliament today. So back in active politics with this win. Ben, what is it that you reckon he will do now? And more importantly, what is it that you want him to do now?
Well, I think, you know, he is going to be, you know, the de facto leader of the backbenchers in Parliament. I think he will, he has, you know, stated that he wanted to, quote-unquote, reform Parliament and I think make them a more effective body. And I think the people should welcome that in order to strengthen the legislative branch of government. And the hope is that it becomes, a Parliament that thrives on debate, does active research, and constructively engages the issues and modernizes itself through the use of select committees and so on. At the same time, we hope that he'll be able to, using his strong articulative powers, to explain government policies that may be less than popular as the government undertakes reforms. I think that is the key value in having Anwar back in Parliament, back in government.
Right. And Rais, what do you think what do you reckon are his next steps?
He has voiced out and reasserted many times that he's going to be focused on parliamentary reforms. And I think that's something that will complement the efforts done by our Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir in firefighting and rebuilding the nation. Anwar has spoken at length about reforms. His party is based on reforms. I think with his presence in the parliament, it will only accentuate the ideas of reforms into reality. So I think it's going to be a very good combination of Tun Mahathir and Dato' Sri Anwar.
Well, thank you so much, Ben, for sharing your thoughts on the PD results. That was Ibrahim Sufian, also known as Ben, the co-founder of Merdeka Center. Now, we're going to continue our conversation with Bersatu's party strategist, Rais Hussein, in just a few minutes, and we're going to be discussing the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto. So stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Joining me in the studio today is Datuk Dr. Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif. He's the chairman of the Policy and Strategy Bureau of Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia, better known as Bersatu. Now, a little bit earlier, we heard from Ben Sufian of the Merdeka Center discussing his quick analysis of the PD results. And thank you for joining that as well, Rais. But you're also Bersatu's Policy and Strategy, head of Bersatu's Policy and Strategy Bureau. You're also the chairman of the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto Committee. So I'd like to spend the next 15 minutes or so discussing the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto. Now, if you'd like to address a question to Rais, it's not too late to send your thoughts and questions. The WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So a lot of talk about the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto lately. You were on that panel when Tan Sri Rafidah Aziz said the Pakatan Harapan government should not put off important decisions because it is shackled by its election manifesto. So, Rais, what did you make of that comment?
I think, first of all, we need to appreciate that I was in the panel, yes, with Rafidah, Tony Pua and Nick Nazmi. Interestingly, when I asked Rafidah in the panel while we were discussing, have you read the manifesto? And she said no. She was pretty honest. But when she was discussing her view of what the manifesto should include, her view of the new dawn of Malaysia, she basically encapsulated everything that is contained in the manifesto. So I told her that, look, whatever you said today is plagiarized from the manifesto. And she was taken aback. So the thing is, what I'm trying to arrive at is many people like to comment on manifesto without reading it. And when you do not read the manifesto, unfortunately, you wouldn't know what is contained. Rafidah, to be fair, that when I explained that way, then she said, then the manifesto is good. This was actually at the end of the session.
Did she say that off record?
No.
She said it at the panel.
It was in the forum. Okay. And she said that if that is the case, then yes, the manifesto is good. Then I volunteered that I will send her a copy of the manifesto so she can read and she can comment.
But to be fair, is the manifesto is 194 pages long.
Yes. This is a serious thing. Let me tell you this. How do we write the manifesto? Manifesto is not written by plucking from the sky, facts and figures plucking from the sky while the bird were flying. No, it was a laborious work. There are three main sources of this manifesto. Number one, we had a series of independent researchers done on what are the people's aspiration or what Malaysian wants over a period of time. So this
how much time?
Over a period of almost 1.5 years. And we wanted to know what people really want. We know the ground is so fertile. People are angry with the cost of living issues and et cetera, et cetera. But we want to independently verify. We went through a very stringent methodical process in research led by 7 professors. Of course, at that point of time, you can't name the 7 professors. They would be out of job in 5 minutes. But they took the risk and they did the research. And one of the big source of the manifesto is what is the aspiration of the people. People may think that 1MDB was a big issue among the people's thoughts. Surprise, surprise. It doesn't even feature in the top 5. It was in the top 10. So it was basically cost of living and so on. That is one source. The second source, which is constructive engagement with various stakeholders, you name it, legal fraternity, bar council, NGOs, C4, and you name it, we had them. And we laboriously take notes to understand what is their aspirations to late in the evening. And that is another compilation. The third source is the aspiration of all the political parties. You have Amanah saying this, you have DAP saying that, you have PPBM saying this, and you have Keadilan saying that. And these are the aspirations of each of the political party who champion certain causes that they so passionately believe in. Then we amalgamated all this particular thing through intense contestation of ideas. It is a polite word of arguing, fighting,
debating,
and getting out of the room in anger and all that. But at the end of the day, the manifesto is an end product of laborious work, research, engagement. And then we have this particular manifesto that went through a rigorous process of the manifesto committee, then you have the Majlis Setiausaha of Pakatan Harapan. It goes back to each of the Supreme Council of the each political parties, comes back to the Majlis President, back and forth 2-3 times, and then it was approved. then it was announced.
Okay, so what you're saying essentially is that a lot of thought went into this manifesto. You're not making these promises lightly. So why is it that you can't fulfill some of these promises?
Okay, now you must remember the sources of manifesto is through engagement, through research, and through the aspirations of political party. And then you must also remember whatever facts and figures that we had was through the published source. Now, how on earth we were to know there were red files and yellow files and green files and what kind of files, which we found out after the election. And that shows that we have a huge debt. The debt that was declared in Parliament was 53% of the GDP, which is about 655 billion ringgit. How are we supposed to know it is actually embedded and, you know, camouflaged as contingent liability and this and that and resulting in about 1.09 trillion ringgit? Be that as may, that we get to know more things coming out and so on, I strongly feel that we must understand that a manifesto is a guide, is a promises made to the people of Malaysia who voted for Pakatan Harapan. They voted for Pakatan Harapan, of course, they want a change. I mean, that is very clear. The ground was very fertile. Our job was to accentuate that anger, and the anger to vote and vote for the victory. That's very clear. Having said that, for us, and for me at least, I do not consider at all the manifesto as a burden or shackle. Why? Because this is the end product of hardcore research.
So you say that it's for you? Are you saying that there are other people within the Pakatan Harapan Coalition that feel that this is
I think many of us feel that it is not a burden or shackle. However, I'll give you an example. Last year, 2017, the government then, Barisan Nasional UMNO, recalibrated their national budget more than 4 or 5 times. And they have access to all information. And we have not access to all information except the published information. So if they are given the opportunity to recalibrate their national budget more than 4 or 5 times, supplementary budget and so on and so forth, come on, at least we should be accorded the same privilege and opportunity to recalibrate the Pernamani manifesto given the new realities that we found out. And we continue to find out now.
Okay, so how do you think that's gone down with the people who voted for you? You know, you're communicating now that we made these promises before elections, but now we're in power and we have to recalibrate. How do you think that's gone down with your voters?
I think the people are generally happy that, first of all, they've got rid of kleptomaniacs from the government. I think that is something that is very good. I think people generally are happy about that. People are generally happy about the new dawn and new ways and a new freedom that they see now in Malaysia. They don't only see, they also experience it themselves. Some of the forums that I attended, they always say this, now I can say this. I said, look, this is already a big success. Then coming back to the manifesto, we had 14 general election. For the first 13 general election, nobody talks about a manifesto a day after the election. Rafida Aziz said the same thing.
But you did it to yourself, right? You guys said that these are the 10 promises we're going to implement within 100 days. Nobody asked you to set that benchmark. Okay. You did it to yourself.
That 10 promises within 100 days are the issues that concern most with the people from our hardcore research, independent research, number one. Number two, let's look at the phase one and phase two of the manifesto. Many people don't understand this. We have the election on 9th of May, right? 9th of May. And I still remember on the 10th of May, somebody called me and asked me, hey, is the Seditious Act is gone? you understand?
That's the expectation. Political literacy, though.
That's expectation of the people. And I will not be surprised if somebody called me on the 8th of May, is it done? That's one day before the election. So what I'm trying to say is that, to put some perspective, there's two phases of the manifesto. The first phase is the 10 promises within 100 days. The second phase is 60 promises within the first tenure of 5 years. Mm. Yes, of the 10 promises, we've delivered about 6. 2 still work in progress. 2, we need some time more. I'll explain to you in a short while.
So actually, let's come back and talk about the two phases of the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto, as well as some of the specific misconceptions about this manifesto. We're going to continue our conversation in this special extended breakfast grill with the chairman of the Policy and Strategy Bureau of Parti Pribumi Malaysia, also the chairman of the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto Committee, Datuk Dr. Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif. Stay tuned to the Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on the Breakfast Grill. I'm Melissa Idris, and here with me is Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif, the head of Bersatu's Policy and Strategy Bureau and chairman of the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto Committee. We're talking all things Pakatan Harapan Manifesto this morning, and thank you everyone for your messages. I'll try to get them as in the time that we have left with Rais. I do want to come back to what we were discussing just before the 8:30 news, Rais, the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto, the election promises that were made in that manifesto. The idea was for it to be implemented in two phases. So the first phase would be 10 core promises to be fulfilled in 10 days. And then the second phase, 60 promises to be implemented during the term, the 5 years. So we can only benchmark what you've done in the 100 days. Where do you think you've fallen short?
I think, thank you for putting that in perspective, 10 promises within the first 100 days and 60 promises within the first tenure of 5 years. So everything there is a transition time. We've inherited a government or administration in a flux. It is easy for me to sit down here and keep on blaming and finger-pointing the previous administration, but I'm not that. Yes, they contributed to the problem. Otherwise, the people wouldn't have changed the government. But saying that, let's take the first 10 promises.
Mm-hmm.
We have completed at least 6 of them.
So GST,
we have the GST stabilizing the price of petrol. Mm-hmm. We have stabilized targeted petrol subsidies. That is work in progress. Why? Because we want to have a targeted subsidy. We do not want a guy who drives a BM 7 Series or Macback getting the same subsidies that the rest. Then we have abolishes unnecessary debts. This is the FELDA. Now,
right.
This is something that we need to work very hard because the database that they have is completely, it's really bad, the database that they
so
have.
So you don't have enough information, you're saying?
Yes, that's why we need to work hard. So if you look at the completed ones, you have the 1, 2, the 4 is introduce EPF contribution
for housewives.
Done.
The PTPTM blacklisting policy.
That is taken off. However, you must know that when we check the PTPTN database, what we have is the name of the student, the IC number, the old address, and the university that they go to. Otherwise, nothing much. So there were some situations where no serious effort was taken for collection. That's number one. Then number two, interestingly, we found out that more than 120,000 of the PTPTN loan guys actually earn more than 7,000 ringgit a month, but they're not paying a cent. So these are the logistical issues that I think, I'm sure, I don't know whether you know Wan Saiful, he is quite short. Now he's becoming shorter because of the burden of the work that he has to do to clear up the mess.
We apologize, Wan Saiful.
It's okay. I mean, he's a good friend of mine. He's my deputy, by the way. And then Royal Commission, we didn't do the Royal Commission, but we went one step further. There was the better one, that is charging people in the court for the 1MDB and all that.
So it was not just 1MDB, though. It was FELDA, it was Tabu Haji, Mara
yes.
as well.
So the only thing that is work in progress is equalize the minimum wage nationally and start the process to increase the minimum wage. We started that now. It was missed in the first 100 days, but we started. But there are suggestions that the increase is not enough. So this is something that we need to work. We need to have a balance between the business community and the workers' request.
Then the MA63 cabinet committee
has been established, yes. And Tun Mahathir himself is leading the what we call the cabinet, and he's very serious about this. I was in many of the discussions on the Sabah Sarawak thing, and I think for once you will start seeing positive progress. So most of it is completed.
But Rais, the one that has no mention yet is Skim Peduli Sihat. So this is about the welfare, right? So this is 500 ringgit of monetary assistance to be granted to the B40.
Okay. This was actually announced by Dr. Zul, the health minister, just days before we reaching the 100 days through some Takaful insurance scheme and all that. So there is a work in progress. So by and large, the 10 promises, despite the difficulties and challenges, as our finance minister, Lim Guan Eng, he says many times that he is the most unpopular finance minister. Believe me, the Malaysians will be very thankful to him in years to come because he is managing the finances of the country in the most difficult times. It is not like... and he's being truthful. He wants to speak the truth, not only to the people who voted us in. He wants to speak the truth to the investors. He wants to speak the truth to everyone. And we are doing our work. Believe me, when I met Tun Mahathir, just a day after he came back from New York, I mean, usually when people fly that long via London and this and that, the following day, he will be at home. But Tun Mahathir, as usual, first thing on Wednesday, he was there, attended a cabinet meeting, post-cabinet meeting, and at 7 o'clock, still meeting us. And you look at this huge table filled with files, and he was saying, every day these files get replenished, non-stop working. And that is not only true for Tun Mahathir. It is also true for all his ministers, working overtime.
Well, he sets the pace, doesn't he? I want to come back and look at some of the things that were in the manifesto that I think voters feel that there were U-turns on, specifically the abolishment of tolls. So that was, I believe, in your manifesto, you said, Pakatan Harapan believes that the provision of basic infrastructure, such as roads and highways, is the responsibility of the government. So that's page 29. And also the UEC, the Unified Examination Certificate, that's also been, you know, the idea is for that, the UEC to be recognised, and that was the second phase of the Pakatan Harapan manifesto. These two issues have resonated with your voters. Talk to me about how you're managing the expectations.
Okay, in terms of toll, there were some people tweeted to me saying that I did not vote for the abolishment of toll. I voted for to getting rid of the kleptomaniacs from the government. Okay, fine.
That's one data.
That's a one perspective. But having said that, if you read page 26 on the promise 6, abolishing toll, we have stated very clearly we need to study and review the concession agreement. At that point of time, Melissa, we are not able to access all the concession agreement for obvious reasons. So now we are accessing it. Now we are looking at it. Now, and given our financial situation, thanks to the previous administration, I'm not blaming them, but this is a fact. I mean, how can we run away from fact, right? So thanks to the previous government administration, we've inherited a huge amount of debt. So we have to manage the fiscal policies prudently. So these are the things that we need to realize. When Tun Mahathir said that doing away with toll is not an easy task to do, he's being factual because the new realities. But remember, there are two types of toll. They have intercity tolls and intra-city tolls. Intercity tolls are like between Alostar and Kuala Lumpur. Intra-city tolls is like the LDPs and all that.
Right.
So I think it is still being studied carefully and to see what is the best that we can do, number one. And number two, one of the off-sited reasons for tolls increase frequently is that the expensive maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
We found out that the maintenance are expensive, because it is being offered to their own sort of cronies.
Okay, with so you're looking cost. At the contracts, the
we concessions. Are looking at the contracts, we're looking at the concession, we are looking at even at the maintenance costs, so that we will be able to bring down, if not completely eliminate, bring down the toll cost. That is for intercity.
Okay.
For intracity, we need to study a little bit more that. But I like
so
to...
So you're saying that this will be fulfilled? The abolishment of tolls will be fulfilled under the Pakatan Harapan government?
It is not on a wholesome basis. We are still reviewing it. Let us come back to the people. You see, as I said, we had 14 general election. 13 general election, nobody talks about manifesto
this
a day
Malaysia
after.
This is Malaysia Baru, right?
Correct. So given this Malaysia Baru and the new dawn of Malaysia, we want to be participative. I think one thing that we need to thank Pakatan Harapan in a way is that we have sensitized people enough to involve in participatory democracy. And I agree, even during before the election, we kept on saying that we want people to participate in democracy. We want to hear the views. We want to listen to the people's views.
Okay, so sometimes you might want to be careful what you wish for, because, you know, it's been 5 months since the Pakatan Harapan government has been in power. And I do want to say, people are not shy about telling you when you're not doing a good job. And I think that's where we should, right? So not just taking stock of the performance in fulfilling election pledges, but also in how you've communicated that message to the public. I mean, several Pakatan Harapan ministers are still having trouble navigating the nuances of communication in the public sphere. I'd like to know, US party strategists for Bersatu specifically, what are you advising your people in terms of communicating the messages and managing expectations?
I think number one, the ministers and deputy ministers, instead of happily accepting Datuship and Datusriship, should focus on reading the manifesto. This is very important.
Make it required reading for them.
Yeah, it must be an obligatory reading for all of them. Number two, based on their reading, understand what can be delivered immediately, the low-hanging fruits, and those that is not that very low-hanging, and what can be done to bridge the gap. And number three, of course, communicating it in a proper narrative is very important. Again, we have sensitized, the people have awakening. It's a huge awakening for the people. People have awakened and they want to be involved. And I think it's a good thing. No more one person decides everything. So this is very important. I think this is a very good thing for Malaysia, rebuilding Malaysia. Coming back a little bit on the recalibration, of the manifesto, I did not mean to change everything about the manifesto. No. We are not going to compromise the five main pillars of the manifesto itself, which is quite eloquently written in the manifesto, the five. Reduce the people's burden, which is very important for us. Institutional and political reforms. Why it is important? Because the entire country is in a flux because of the destruction of the institutional and democratic institutions. Spur sustainable, equitable economic growth, Sabah and Sarawak, MAG 63, and create a Malaysia that is inclusive, moderate and respected globally. Now, this will not be compromised. Now, the ingredient, maybe there will be a delay. Like I said, phase two, we have 60 promises of that. Tun Mahathir have repeatedly said, we've delivered 21. This was about 2 months ago, 1 month ago, 21, right? Now, we have the first 5 years to deliver. That doesn't mean we have to wait until the end of the 5 years.
Right.
But whatever that we can do as quickly as we can, we need to be responsible and accountable. Manifesto is not a burden. It's an immense responsibility. And we are here to fulfill it.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. So I'd like to say thank you so much for being on the show to discuss this further. That was Datuk Dr. Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif, Chairman of the Policy and Strategy Bureau for Bersatu. Thank you for being on The Breakfast Grill today.
Thank you.
I'm Melissa Idris for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's Mobile Data Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.